This is the Credit Union Leadership Podcast with Mike Neal. Michael Neal and Associates has been consulting credit unions for nearly two decades. He and his team help companies with three aspects of growth: cultural development, leadership, and management development. To learn more about how Michael Neal and Associates can help your credit union grow, visit michaelneal.com. Producing this episode, I'm Chad Harrington. This is season one for the Credit Union Leadership Podcast, and it's called How to Create a Thriving Credit Union Culture. Today's episode is Coaching for Maximum Performance, where Mike and I talk about what credit union leaders can do to help their employees accomplish their goals. In this episode, you'll hear what Mike Neal has learned over his years of consulting hundreds of credit unions. Here's Mike answering my question about the definition of coaching. Mike, if I Google definition of coaching, I get over 23 million results in a half a second. You know, it seems like everybody's got a definition for coaching. But what's yours?
Coaching to me is about improving people. So you're always coaching people to their highest potential. So you're always coaching people to be as good as they can be at something rather than just meeting a goal or a minimum standard. So it's improving people to their highest potential to meet or exceed the team's goals. Because the team is more important than any single player, whether it be a branch or a department. You have certain objectives to meet, and that synergy that comes together from creating an effective team is where the amazing lives. And so it's improving people to their highest potential to reach the team's goals. And I think the big takeaways from that are you're always coaching people, not things. You manage things. You manage processes. You manage outcomes. For example, I can manage accounts payable, but I coach the accounts payable representative. I manage the core processor, but I coach the help desk employee that works in IT. So you're always coaching people. So coaching is a people job, not a process job or an outcome job. And then, again, to meet their highest potential. And people have such great potential. And they really don't meet their potential just through training or being given goals, but having people invest and develop and believe in them and not accept mediocre and challenge them to do better. And again, the team factor is important in a time, I think, where we've gotten overly focused on the individual and diversity, meaning you've got to accept my dysfunction, right? That what we've got to do is other people, the other focus of team is really got to be very, very important from a coaching perspective.
So what has been a memorable coaching experience while you've been working with a credit union? You know, what's something that stands out in your mind where someone was coached to reach their highest potential, and what exactly about that made it great?
Well, I've been doing this a long time, so there's a lot of memorable experiences. But I would say one that always stands out in my mind was a time when I was working with a credit union in Michigan, one of my many Michigan clients. And I'd been working with a branch manager who had an employee who had not met their sales expectations month after month after month. In fact, to say they were not meeting their sales expectations was an overstatement. They were doing zero. Zero, zero, okay. Zero. This person had gone through the training. This person had been, they'd been given every opportunity to be successful. And there were other people within that branch that were being successful at this endeavor. So this person was simply, clearly, straightforward, not willing to do it. And so willing that they were disabling themselves from doing it such that the end result was zero constantly. So every time I would come back to work with this coach, she would explain to me, I think she is willing to do it, and I think she's able to do it. She's just not doing it. And so I said to her one day, I said, do you hear yourself talking out loud? Because if somebody's willing to do something and able to do something, by definition, they're doing it. You've described for me the only person that's ever been willing to do something, able to do something, produces zero. And so I said that early on in our meetings, and each subsequent meeting kind of got increasingly agitated on her part towards me. So the very last meeting, after about three or four of these meetings, the manager was what I call pre-mad. You know, it's like, I know Mike Neal's going to not believe that she's willing and able, so I'm already mad up front. So the door almost blew open before she touched it, you know, just boom. And she came in and she pitched the results on the table. And she goes, yeah, she still hasn't done anything, but I still think she's willing and able. And so she was this really defiant attitude that I hadn't seen before. And so I was thinking, what am I going to do with this? You know, this is the last time I'm ever going to talk with her. And I've really got to have some type of a breakthrough. And so rather than kind of, you know, melting her over time, she's actually bowing up. And so I just kind of reached for something. And I said, let me ask you a question. How much does she weigh? And she said, what? I said, how much does the employee weigh? And she said, I think that's a terribly inappropriate question. And I said, well, you've worked with me for 9 months. You know that I'm not particularly appropriate. I want us to have results. So how much does she weigh? Just work with me on this. And she said, I don't know. She's very exasperated. She said, I don't know, 130 pounds. And I looked at her right in the eyes and I said, what does it feel like to carry around 130 pounds on your back every day? I bet you are exhausted. And she just stared back at me for the longest time. Seemed like a minute, probably wasn't, but it seemed like that. And a tear welled up in the corner of her eye. And it rolled down her cheek and then the other eye. And pretty soon, tears were just rolling down her cheek. And she said, oh my gosh, you're right. I have been trying to carry her and it's not working. I said, not only are you carrying her, she's probably complaining about the ride, isn't she? And she said, you're exactly right. I said, it's like you're carrying her on your back and she's complaining about, you know, your shoulder bone's digging in my back. Can you put a little pillow up under there? Can you walk slower? Could you not be so bouncy?
Yeah.
And she said, you're right. She said, I meet with her every month like I'm supposed to. And, you know, and I tell her, you know, I want you to be successful and I want to help you and you're still not doing any. What do you need me to do to help you? And she just keeps getting mad that I keep meeting with her. She said, what do I do? I said, it's the very same thing we've been talking about from day one. She's not willing to do it. She's able to do it. You know, she's able to do it. She's had all the resources everybody else has, all the training, all the coaching. It's time to sit down and ask her, what is she going to do to be fully effective? And so we walk through a process that I call effective confrontation, how you approach and redirect an employee who has an unwilling behavior. And so we role played it and I said, call me and let me know how it went. A lot of times people don't follow up with me and let me know how it went. So I'm kind of left hanging, wondering what the outcome was. So the next day I'm back in my office and before 9 o'clock, I get a phone call. Ring, Mike Neal. Hey, it's me. Who? From yesterday. I said, wow, that was quick. I said, have you already talked to her? Yeah, I did. I said, well, what happened? Well, I did what you said. I sat down with her and I asked, what are you going to do to be effective? And she looked at me, and she was so mad. And she said, seriously, it's up to me now? She said, then I quit. And she just got her things, and she walked straight out the door. And we had to call her later and try to find out how we wanted to get the rest of her stuff to her. She walked right out. When I asked her, what was she going to do? I said, what did you learn? She said it was obvious she'd already quit a long time ago, but we were still just paying her.
Wow.
So that was just a memorable experience because in a way, this manager wanted this employee's success far more than the employee did. And one of my mentors, Chuck Gordon, told me many years ago, just out of the blue, Michael, you can't care about it more than they do. And I said, what do you mean by that? He said, you'll get it one day. And I said, okay, thanks, Yoda. But this was an example of that your force of will cannot make someone who's unwilling turn their performance around. What it comes down to is a willingness on the part of the coach to ask the employee, what are you going to do differently? And so many people have connotated coaching to be cheerleading, right? I'm an encourager. I'm a mentor. I'm a life guide. I'm there for you. I've got an open door policy. I'm going to catch you doing everything right. I'm going to pat you on the back. I'm going to tell you you can do it when you say you can't do it. And I'm not saying any of those things are wrong. But every coach that I've ever seen that's effective is willing to cut a player from the team when they have shown repeatedly that they have zero interest in their impact or their contribution to the team. And so that's why I differentiate between a cheerleader, someone who's got their focus turned toward the crowd and encouraging the crowd to cheer and encouraging the team to play hard, but providing no instruction, no direction, and no accountability. And so I think that's a pretty good example of a really impactful moment that really struck home to me, that some people think coaching is encouraging, and it is that, but it is much more than that.
You're listening to the Credit Union Leadership Podcast with Mike Neal, where Mike helps you, the credit union leader, to create a thriving credit union culture where you live. To learn more about the services that Michael Neal and Associates offers, visit michaelneal.com. This episode is all about coaching. Mike's been talking about how to coach for maximum performance. Now he's going to talk about how to help your employees transfer into the workplace what you teach them in the classroom.
If you were to summarize what gap exactly a credit union coach fills for credit unions, how would you summarize that?
It's changing behavior. We hire employees who we believe have the requisite attributes to be successful, and then we give them training on what to do. If there's no coaching, the big gap is them doing what they're trained to do. I've had credit unions call me and ask me to come retrain employees that have already been trained. And I'll ask, well, so I'm just wondering why you think the training didn't work last time. I don't know. They just weren't motivated. Well, it's not that they weren't motivated. They didn't care to do what they were being trained to do. And they're doubling down on the failure by asking someone to come in and retrain an employee who already knows what to do, but there's no coaching there to transfer the skill from the classroom into the workplace. The comparison I would use would be this, Chad. I watch a video on swimming called You in Swimming, and I go through a 1 hour long computer-based training program on how to swim. I watch swimming videos, and I pass the little post test to make sure I paid attention. And then you go throw me in the pool. That's going to be a bad situation. Somebody's going to have to go in there and save me. I do not learn how to swim by watching a video or by going to a class on swimming. Doesn't mean that that class in that video is useless, but somebody's got to get in the pool with me and say, now when you apply these behaviors that you watch on the video, this is how you do it. And they've got to hold me up and then hold me a little less and then be next to me and then let me go. But that's skill transference, you might call it, but it is changing behaviors. And I remember years ago, and when I was in operations in a credit union, people would call up and they'd say, why aren't we teaching tellers to do X? Well, we are. Well, why aren't they doing it? I don't know, but they were trained. Well, the training doesn't work. The training was just fine. The coaching is where the breakdown was.
So what are the top principles that you can distill from your experience coaching credit unions that would be helpful for others who want to do the same thing?
Yeah. I think there's some primary, cornerstones, for lack of a better word. I think one of them is that you catch people doing things right. I think it's so important to redirecting behavior by catching people doing things right. In other words, if I want somebody to call a member by their name, one of the things I'll do is I'll establish, this is very important, I want us to do this. And then what I'll do is I'll catch somebody doing that and say, I want to tell you how much I appreciate you calling the members by their name today. That really makes a big impact in developing relationships, and it's really the level of service we want to set here. And then when others hear me say that, and when that person hears me say that, they're going to be much more likely to repeat that behavior. Rather than what a lot of people do is they stand up there and say, I haven't heard a single person calling anyone by their name today. After we just got finished talking about it, one of the things I found out is you can't shame people into behavior that they believe is voluntary. And so catching people doing things right is a key. Now, that doesn't mean you don't redirect inappropriate behavior. That would be foolish. But we got to focus on catching people doing things right, I believe, to get people to repeat behaviors and also, Chad, to have the moral authority when it comes time for redirection. You know, in marital counseling, they talk about deposits in the love bank and withdrawals from the love bank, you know, and you've got to have these deposits in there of, yes, I recognize when you do well, to be able to have some currency in there when you sit down and say, you've got to do this differently.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And another one, I think, is a setting high standards. A manager came to me one day and she said, Mike, I'm so thrilled. All my employees are meeting their minimum expectations. And I said, so you're thrilled about that? She goes, yeah, well, they were all terrible before this. Okay, so, I mean, I get the idea that progress is progress, right? But it just sounded funny that she was thrilled, almost like my coaching job is done now. No one sucks, right? And so for her, she just didn't want the employees to be in a write-up phase, in the disciplinary phase of their career. So as we said, coaching is about improving people their highest performance. So I developed this idea, this theory, if you'll allow me to call it that, called effort equity. And when I was writing my book, Coaching for Maximum Performance, which everybody listening to the podcast can get free going to my website, michaelneal.com, I was thinking, how am I going to explain this concept? And I developed the term effort equity to describe it. And effort equity really is best presented by describing its three levels. Level one of effort equity is natural effort equity, is what I call it. You come to work for me, Chad, and I give you a position description, and I say I'm going to pay you $15 an hour. We've created a stasis. We've created a situation where for what's written here, you get $15 an hour. And if I come back the next year and say, now we want you to try to talk to your members about products and services and add value in this way, most people, not all, but most people think, oh, are we going to get incentives for that? Are we going to get to wear jeans or do something? Because if you're asking for something more, we're now out of equity. And I think it's a subconscious state. I don't think people overtly, cognitively calculate that and say, hey, wait a minute. They just say things like, well, that doesn't seem fair. That doesn't seem like it's fair if we don't get to wear jeans or at least have more flex time or you fill in the blank. So that's natural effort equity. I think most people exist in that. People like you and me don't. We're the kind of people that people give work to and we say, yes, sir, may I have another? I'll be happy to do that because I think you and I kind of inherently believe that if we don't do it, it's probably not going to be done right. So we probably need to do it anyway, right? So then level two is what I call comparative effort equity. And comparative effort equity is when an employee looks at another employee and uses the underperformance of that employee to insulate themselves from their own underperformance. For example, I might say, hey, I may not be the easiest guy to work with, but at least I'm not like Chad. He's a jerk to everybody. Hey, I may not be the best cross-seller in the world, but at least I'm not like Janet. She does nothing. You know, I may not be the most even-keeled person, but at least I'm not like Mary. She's nuts all the time. And so rather than be good, I find the lowest common denominator in any area which I want to excuse my own performance, and I gravitate toward that. That's why I say, Chad, to all my leaders, what you're willing to accept will become your standard. And we'll talk about that a little bit more in the leadership section. But the idea is that if you allow those underperformers to exist, you always provide that lowest common denominator for people who are living in comparative effort equity to look to and drive their performance down to. And then the third level of effort equity is, to me, by far the most dangerous. It's what I call institutional effort equity. And very simply, it's when the leadership team accepts number one and number two. And I hear it, Chad, and I see it over and over again. And it's, I believe, one of the most destructive things for credit unions. Because here's the approach. A branch manager says, well, you know, Mary may not cross-sell, but she's a great teller. She shows up to work every day on time with a great attitude, and she loves the members, and she loves her team, and she'll do anything for anybody. So what they're basically saying is, I am not going to coach her up on this critical part of her job because of all the other things that she does. If we take a maybe what some people call a back office example, they'll say, you know what? Yeah, my IT guy treats people very poorly. He doesn't return phone calls. He's hard to work with. He's arrogant. But you know what? He really knows the system. And when the chips are down, he will be able to find out what's wrong and he'll be able to fix it. And let's face it, if he were to walk out the door, we couldn't even run this place tomorrow. So all things considered, I'm happy with him. So in other words, I'm not going to coach you up in an area in which you need to be improved because there's other areas in which you excel. So what we create is what I call credit union savants. And what we have is we have someone in error reconciliation that yells at people, uses inappropriate language, laughs at people. But man, she can fix the problems. And so we create this savant-like environment where the better you are technically, the more the members like you, other behaviors are excused. The problem with that, Chad, is that no one who's underperforming looks at those people and says to themselves, oh, well, Betty's a savant. I mean, Betty's a genius. No wonder the rules don't apply to her. I mean, it's Betty. No, they'll just say, well, what about her language? They'll say, what about his selling? What about his behavior? And they don't see them as being special. They just see them as being lesser than them. And then our attempts to redirect that employee lose all credibility.
What would you say are the primary challenges that managers face when they're trying to be more effective in coaching? So we've talked about, you know, some of the difficulties employees have. What about managers? What would you say are the primary challenges that they face in credit unions?
Yeah, I think unique to credit unions, many times a manager is promoted because of their operational efficiency or proficiency. And so the best teller becomes the best member service rep, it becomes the best loan processor, it becomes the best loan officer, and one day you need a branch manager, and so tag, you're it. And they haven't been trained in being a manager, and their rise, their ascendancy has come from being the fastest, the most knowledgeable, the least error-prone, and having the best attitude. And so when you get to be a manager, you've got delegation, you've got coaching, you've got leadership, you've got communication skills, you've got all kinds of things they've never been taught to do. And so many credit unions do not have a game plan to identify potential managers and pre-develop them or take current managers and develop them. So what happens? What they want to do is they pray that somebody will be out of balance because they can fix that out of balance from 300 miles away on a cell phone. But what they live in fear of is somebody knocking on the door, knock, knock, knock. Yeah, she's looking at me mean, make her stop. Oh, can you just be out of balance? I can fix that, you know, but I can't fix that weirdness. I don't know what to do. And so they have a tendency to feel very confident in their operational ability, but very unconfident in redirecting people, addressing behaviors, because it's not a natural skill for everybody, and they haven't had the requisite training they need to be able to do it. So that's one challenge. I think the other challenge is that credit unions have a tendency to be polite places, friendly places, where we think the best of everybody. And as such, the natural tendency of most credit union managers is to assume that the reason an employee is underperforming is because they don't know how to do it. So we train and we retrain and we one-on-one train and we all kinds of training. And statistically, research shows this over and over again. Our research and everybody else's research. Most underperformance comes from a lack of engagement or a lack of willingness, if you will, to do something, not a lack of knowledge. There aren't a lot of credit union employees running around who don't know what to do, but yet mistakes are made and they're not doing it right. It's not because they don't know how to do it, it's they don't want to do it. So we have a tendency to, as managers, invest more training than we should and more personal commitment to fix them and less commitment to challenge them and say, now what are you going to do differently, Chad, to be effective in this area? Because that's how you redirect an employee who is unwilling to do something. An employee is unable to do something, they need training. But the natural tendency is, because of our, I don't want this to come across wrong, passive-aggressive tendencies, is everybody wants to do it, and if they're not doing it, I've got to find out what's preventing it and unlock that for them.
At the end of the day, bottom line, why do you think coaching is so important for credit unions?
Because if you want outcomes to change, behaviors have to change. Behaviors always precede outcomes. And this is a real challenge in the credit union world, because what we have a tendency to do is we say, we need more loans. So what's our knee-jerk reaction? Get the senior management team together and say, we need to develop more loans. Well, why don't we do a loan promotion? All the solutions involve us. All the solutions involve a loan promotion, lowering the rate, doing something, a thing, a tactic, a process. And the Gallup Group does their survey of employee engagement every year, and the most recent one shows that about 70% of employees say they're disengaged in their work, disengaged at some level, either actively disengaged or simply just disengaged, almost 70% from the Gallup Group. And so the reality is that employees are underperforming on a massive scale in organizations. Even if we say credit unions are so much better, we'd cut those numbers in half. All right, so 27%, 35% of our employees are disengaged. That's still not good. And so what happens is management teams have a tendency to focus on getting more done through planning and processes and tactics to resolve challenges and make improvements, when the biggest leaps forward will be, if you want more loans, get your employees to talk to more members about loans. If you want to decrease errors, well, that will be done through people making fewer errors and paying more attention, not just spending tens of thousands or millions of dollars on new technologies that will prevent them from making errors. And so we've got to fill this gap of overmanaging, which is what I call it, when we see ourselves as a solution to everything, to balancing that with coaching. What are you going to do differently, Chad, to make sure you're effective in this area? When we start developing engaged employees, then all the other problems go away. We improve the member experience because we've got employees who are finding ways to make it work, finding ways to engage members. And then they want to talk to members about our products and services. They don't want to make errors. They want to be at work because they see it as a place to be where they provide value than a place to take as many days off from as they are being given. And so coaching is so critical, because without it, what we do is we just look at each other as senior managers and say, well, what now? What do we need to do now? What do we need to buy, install, plan for, or create to make it better, and the employees continue to underperform. So without coaching, that underperformance is a natural state.
You've been listening to the Credit Union Leadership Podcast with Mike Neal. If you want Michael Neal and Associates to help you and your credit union develop a thriving credit union culture, visit michaelneal.com.